to the political cesspool known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
And welcome, everybody, to the Political Cesspool radio program. As the year continues to move forward, here we are now at the end of July, or nearing the end of July. The show moves forward as well. Welcome. Saturday evening, July 21st, 2012. I'm your host, James Edwards. You're in the Political Cesspool as we broadcast to you from our flagship radio station in Memphis, Tennessee, going out to the various AM/FM affiliate stations in select markets across the country, courtesy of the Liberty News Radio Network. And tonight we have two very special guests that will be joining us on our syndicated radio program. One is going to be making his debut appearance in the second hour. You're going to hear from a man who has never before appeared on our award-winning broadcast. And then a little later on in the show, during the third hour, we're going to have another very highly acclaimed guest that's going to be making an anticipated encore. So be sure to stay tuned tonight throughout the program to find out who these mystery guests are. We're also going to be offering exclusive commentary on the Colorado theater shootings tonight here on the Political Cesspool radio program. So all that and much, much more. If you've gone to our website today, you know we've got a plethora of stories in the hopper, as we always do. Quickly want to share word with you. Keith Alexander, not in the studio with me right now. You'll remember, fans of this show will remember, that a few weeks ago, Keith's wife passed away. His beloved wife passed away unexpectedly, went to sleep, and never woke up. And there was an outpouring of condolences and love towards Keith from our listening audience. Well, the reason Keith is not with us tonight is because one of his sons is in the hospital, had a boating accident, and is in the hospital here in Memphis. We don't think that it's too serious, and I say that, but as I say that, still it was serious enough for his son to be admitted into the hospital, and that is where Keith is at tonight. And so we ask that once again, we have your prayers on behalf of Keith Alexander and his family. Keith Alexander, one of my best friends in the world. Anyone who's listened to this show, you know how valuable he is to our team here, and how much you learn from the knowledge and wisdom that Keith shares every week on this radio show. And so we ask that everyone listening out there tonight, right here at the top of the show, wanted to be sure to get that out there. Pray for Keith and pray for his son's speedy recovery. And we'll keep you posted on the details as we find more out. And hopefully Keith will give us an update tonight a little later on in the show. Okay, quickly before we get started tonight, we've got a caller right out of the gates tonight, Richard in Colorado calling in. Richard, how are you?
No, I'm from Ohio.
Oh, my apologies. I've been, obviously preoccupied with this situation in Colorado. I thought you were going to be calling in to give us the scoop. My mistake. Well, how are things in Ohio? Just as good.
Yeah, it's just like everywhere else in this country. I just wanted to give my condolences to Keith and also our prayers to him and his family right now.
Thank you so much.
I wanted to offer that out. And I wanted to just make a comment on your earlier guest. He was saying that why would Romney even want to go to a hostile situation like that? But as you said, I think he had like 2% of their vote he's carrying. If anything, I think he could possibly win this election by 2%. You know? And it could be that 2% that puts him over the hump.
Well, in the case of the NAACP, you're talking last week when Richard Spencer and I were discussing Mitt Romney's appearance at the NAACP convention where he was booed. That 2% out of that group that votes for him are the ones that just did it by mistake, I guess. But, I mean, he could certainly win by 2%, but I think he's more likely to get that extra 2% by, as we've said in the past, going hunting where the ducks are. But anyway, not to interrupt you, my friend.
I think that if he did pick Condoleezza Rice as a running mate, I think you would have that same historical opportunity there, because it'd be the first black woman voted as a vice president. I know that, you know, a lot of people say they're conservatives and this and that, but let's say that the bottom line is probably, would that turn off white conservatives from voting for him? I don't think it would. I think the it's the alternative that would be the evil. I mean, we're always voting against somebody. We're never voting for somebody. The last time I voted for somebody was when Buchanan ran.
Right.
That was the last time I ever voted for someone, you know. So basically, it's always voting against the lesser of two evils. So basically, even if he picked her as a running mate, there's a potential that women would vote for him, a lot more women would vote for him, more blacks would vote for him. It'd be a historical, younger whites who voted for Obama last time would probably, you know, you get that historical theme again that kind of carried Obama into that office. There might be a percentage that would, in fact, help him get over the hump there.
Well, it's possible, but I would say, you know, you asked, would it turn off more conservatives than the blacks that it would attract to such a hypothetical ticket? I think Romney himself is doing enough to discourage conservatives for voting for him without adding Condoleezza Rice. But I'll tell you, if he does add her, I think that it will drive more conservatives away than it will add blacks to the GOP column. I mean, that's just my two cents. I personally, and I know that there's a lot of split. I mean, normally on this radio program, there's a lot of overlay between the things that we say on the air and the way it's received by the listening audience. There's a lot of agreement, I guess. I would say that, you know, the audience and the hosting staff agree with one another pretty much across the board on the most important aspects of the topics that we discuss. But I will say, when it comes to elections, I mean, there is a very big disparity in terms of people who vote for the lesser of two evils, people who believe that the Republicans have enough going for them to vote for them out of free will, people that want to go third party. And there's always a pretty heated debate on the discussion threads on the articles on the website when it comes up to who are you voting for. And there's not a lot of agreement in our camp on this. People go a lot of different directions when it comes to the TPC listeners and who they're going to go for. Personally, I've never voted for a Republican presidential nominee. Going back to my first election in 1998 was my first election, and then 2000 was my first presidential election, and I've never voted for a GOP nominee. I don't think I'll be doing it this year either with Mitt Romney as the nominee. But, you know, again, that's just my two cents. Everyone's free, and I encourage everyone to vote for whoever they think is best for the job for the reasons that they have in their hearts. And I appreciate you calling in tonight and sharing yours, my friend.
All right. Thank you very much, James.
And anytime. Call back anytime. Well, so we're off and underway here this evening. I'm flying solo this first hour. We do have, as I mentioned, a couple of great guests forthcoming and a lot of stories that we've been tracking that we want to bring to your attention. Now, we started the show off with some serious news with regards to Keith's family. Again, I want to let you know that according to Keith, and I talked to him just minutes before the show started tonight, doesn't seem to be a very serious situation, so we're going to keep our fingers crossed and hope that it continues to develop and things continue to improve there. It's not an emergency, as best we know. But we're going to get to some good news. Chick-fil-A stands up to the sodomite lobby. That's going to come up before the end of this hour. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be back with more right after this on the Political Cesspool Radio program.
Right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be.
Are you looking for an affordable way to earn your bachelor's degree? Do you want a college experience that's more personal? Then discover your future at America's Transfer College. Students across the U.S. are choosing Ivy Bridge College as a better, smarter way to earn their degree. Thanks to Ivy Bridge's unique program, starting at a two-year college and transferring to finish your degree has never been easier. The program is simple. Start with Ivy Bridge College and take your first 2 years of college online. Transfer to one of over 140 of Ivy Bridge's partner schools and take your upper division courses. Then graduate with your bachelor's degree from the school of your choice. Personal attention, small class sizes, affordable tuition, and a clear pathway to graduation. Start your academic journey and contact us to learn more about Ivy Bridge College today. Call 877-622-2059 or visit americastransfercollege.com to find out more.
Are you looking to experience the great outdoors in comfort? Are you sick and tired of sleeping bags that are too small, cots that are too narrow, or backpacks that just don't stand up to the wear and tear? Look no further than Teton Sports, a leader in quality, comfortable camping gear. Try our Teton Sports Mammoth 0° sleeping bag. This comfortable family-sized sleeping bag can hold two adults and one child, or four young children. Its interior storage pocket holds wallets, keys, and other valuables. Or check out our Teton Sports Outfitter Extra Extra Large Cot, a camping cot with a steel frame. It's more than 7 feet long and 3 feet wide and supports up to 600 pounds. Then it folds up to a manageable 3.5 feet by 1 foot. Or our Teton Sports Explorer 4000 internal frame backpack. Its dual aluminum stays adjust to the contour of your back and can hold up to 4,000 cubic inches. Padded shoulder straps, padded waist belts, and padded lumbar area for maximum comfort with airflow systems to reduce heat. It's time you start camping comfortably. Look for Teton Sports products online or at a store near you.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Previous caller, Richard from Ohio, just a quick follow-up to that. He was mentioning Mitt Romney, the potential, and I don't know how serious it is at this point, about... Romney's intentions to add Condoleezza Rice as his running mate. Pat Buchanan, our friend, wrote a pretty interesting column about that, appropriately titled, Is Romney Serious About Condi? And you can check that out. And at the end of that, I posted for you the audio of Pat Buchanan's first appearance on this radio program back in September of 2006, during which we talk about failed Republican strategies, such as the one Mitt is supposedly considering employing, and also the third world invasion of America. All that there at the link, and you can go back and revisit Pat's first appearance on this radio show while you're there. Now, a little bit of good news. Chick-fil-A stands up to the sodomite lobby, and the question now becomes, and as far as I am concerned, the answer is yes, at least the only one that I know, and I'm answering the question I'm about to ask, is Chick-fil-A the only chain that won't bow a knee to political correctness? And here's the story, a feel-good story. The president of Chick-fil-A, the fast food chain with more than 1,600 restaurants and $4 billion in revenue, has come out against same-sex marriage. I think we're inviting God's judgment on our nation when we shake our fist at him and say, we know better than you as to what constitutes a marriage, said Dan Cathy, the company's president and chief operating officer. I pray God's mercy on our generation that has such a prideful, arrogant attitude to think that we have the audacity to define what marriage is about. In an interview published this week, Cathy doubled down on his stance against same-sex unions by saying this, guilty as charged. We're very much supportive of the family, the biblical definition of the family unit. We're a family-owned business, a family-led business, and we're all married to our first wives. We give God thanks for that. We know that it might not be a popular stand with everyone, but we thank the Lord we live in a country that we can share our views and operate on biblical principles. The company's founder, Dan's father, Truett Cathy, in 1946, has a history of unapologetic social conservatism, as some media outlets put it. All 1,608 Chick-fil-A stores are closed on Sunday, a day of rest for most Christians. Chick-fil-A's charitable arm donated more than $1.1 million between 2003 and 2008 to anti lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender groups. That's how the story puts it, doubling that amount to 2 million in 2009. Earlier this year, students at Northeastern University protested a proposal to put a Chick-fil-A on its Boston campus because the company's history of supporting anti-gay organizations, the school abandoned its plan. So there again, you have a school in Boston, the bluest of blue states, as Keith would call it, also the state that gave us this year's Republican nominee. Go figure. But anyway, back to Chick-fil-A. God bless them. I've always liked Chick-fil-A. They have the best chicken sandwiches in the world. They're a southern chain, and they're one of the few remaining stores that, as the story mentioned, remains closed for business on Sunday. And after reading stories like this, they're putting their money where their mouth is. Millions of dollars going to oppose sodomite marriage makes me like them even more. And listen, closed on Sunday, standing up for social issues, at least this one social issue. I mean, and if that's the only one that they stand for publicly that I can agree with, well, at least they stand for that one. But you know, Chick-fil-A, obviously a good southern chain Christian business. And, they're cutting their profits down by 1/7 by closing on Sundays, but they're still making billions in revenue. So this is the way it can be done. And it just goes to show you give a good product. You don't have to cow to political correctness in order to punch your meal ticket. No pun intended. So continue to support Chick-fil-A, everybody. They're at least doing good on this one issue, and they have pretty good food. Now, this show is a roller coaster. We take you up, we take you down, we take you up, we take you back down again. German authorities, and we have a pretty interesting video to go along with this post at our official internet headquarters, thepoliticalcesspool.org. German authorities continue to downplay Dresden, and of course I'm talking about the despicable bombing of Dresden, apparently a play that the Allies took from the book of General Sherman in the War of Northern Aggression, just firebombing man, woman, and child in a civilian city, a non-military city, Dresden, Germany, near the end of World War II. Dresden was declared a safe haven for German refugees. The population swelled from 1 million to 2 million. Most of the refugees were women and children. Then, of course, as we all know, the British and American Air Forces conducted a mass firebombing of the city. The bombing held no strategic importance. It was widely believed by historians that the motive of the bombing was to prove to Joseph Stalin that the Allies could be as brutal as he was. American author Kurt Vonnegut was a POW in Dresden at the time of the bombing. Most Americans had no knowledge of the attack until the release of his movie, Slaughterhouse-Five. After the movie, the U.S. government conducted a study and said that 100,000 German civilians were killed in the firebombing. Most of the victims were homeless refugees. A bizarre new form of white guilt in Germany is to deny war crimes against their own people. Members of the far-left German political parties now downplay and or dispute war crimes against Germany. However, German people are sent to prison for downplaying or disputing war crimes committed by Germans during World War II. The firebombing of Dresden has been downplayed into a minor event by left-wing political parties in Germany in recent years. Those who continue to hold memorials for the victims at Dresden are denounced as Nazi sympathizers. As recent as 2002, the remains of 11 children and adult females were excavated in Dresden. Local authorities hid the excavation from the public. A major German news outlet is now asking why the dig was censored. So anyway, basically, you heard the story. I read it there. You know what's going on there. German authorities continue to downplay the Dresden atrocities. But in reading that story, it forced me to ask the question, what is more damaging to society, to civilization? Atomic bombings, fire bombings like the one Dresden suffered, or diversity? And I think a very compelling and strong case can be made for the latter of those two. You know, we just talked about the firebombing of Dresden. You know, we have this report, okay? You got to see this. If you look at one post on the political cesspool this week, it might have to be this one. It's a report about Gary, Indiana. It's a dying industrial town. It's a ghost town, and it gives you a pretty clear indication of what America's future is going to look like in these so-called bastions of multiculturalism, like Detroit, like Gary, Indiana. Gary, Indiana has never been destroyed by firebombs the way Dresden, Germany was. Gary, Indiana is a very diverse town. city with a 90% black population, and it now looks like a post-apocalyptic wasteland. Now, Dresden, on the other hand, as you know, a city that was absolutely razed to the ground during war, was and still is essentially all white, and the results have been predictable. Now, again, you go to this posting entitled Diversity versus Atomic Bombs, and you see this video of modern-day Gary, Indiana in 2012, and you see a picture of Dresden, Germany in 2012, a city that was 90% rubble. The city center was 90% dust, okay, in the mid-1940s. It was gone, obliterated. Now completely rebuilt, it looks like, well, my God, it's just absolutely beautiful. Now imagine if Americans in 1942 could have taken a look 60 years into the future, 70 years into the future, and seen the following cities in 2012. Detroit, Dresden, Hiroshima, and Gary, Indiana. You take those four cities. Detroit and Gary on our side, or the Allies' side. Dresden and Hiroshima on the other side. You would have to have drawn the logical conclusion that the Allies lost World War II, and at this point, obviously, it's both sides lost that war, truly. Dresden and Hiroshima look like shining examples of first world civilization today, while Gary and Detroit don't. And you can expect, again, more American cities to suffer this fate as we continue to sacrifice excellence at the altar of multiculturalism. We'll be right back.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. You're home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Are you looking for literature from authors who aren't ashamed of their European-American heritage? Are you looking for books that don't shy away from the forbidden facts? You used to look all over the internet for these books, but you can now find them all at the same place, LighthouseLiterature.com. Whether you're looking for rare classics from the great thinkers or the latest and most popular books from guys like me, Lighthouse Literature is your trusted source for the best books at the best prices. For a limited time, you can get my new book, Racism Schmacism, from Lighthouse Literature for only $10. When you make a purchase from www.lighthouseliterature.com, you're helping support dedicated real-world advocates and activists. So, what are you waiting for? Surf on over to lighthouseliterature.com, a bright light for the right.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Yeah, we've been working hard, babe. To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get
out of this place. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Riding to the sound of the guns, that's Bill Rowland tonight. I gave Bill a call, about 45 seconds before I went on the air. He had plans, of course, to do other things tonight. And I said, hey, just found out from Keith he can't come in tonight, and can you be here? And here he is. So thanks for sending in the cavalry, Bill.
James, no problem. As always, as you say, when the trumpet sounds, I try to ride to the guns. And you know, tonight, of course, I think the big story, it's all you see on the news, is the tragic shooting in Aurora, Colorado, at the movie theater at the premiere of Batman, The Dark Knight. I'm sure you've discussed that some on the air or mentioned it, but it's clearly a terrible thing. In fact, my daughter went to the premiere here in Memphis, and you know, when she got home, we found out about this incident in Colorado, and it certainly is a very dark and troubling incident. You know, I've never been a big believer in apocalypse in our generation and or the end of days. But I'm beginning to wonder. There's so much darkness in the world, so much violence, and so much it seems like random malice, that you begin to wonder if we are in the days of the end times.
Bill, it's a great preface to the commentary tonight, and I've got to make an admission here, and I told you just a few minutes ago, I've been really behind this week. A very good friend of mine, a fellow I grew up with, and his wife, who just so happens to be my wife's best friend, they'll be moving down to southern Mississippi, and they're actually moving today. Today was their last day in town, and we've been loading up boxes, not only from about 8 this morning until 5 p.m., about an hour before I had to come into the studio tonight. We've been doing it all week. In fact, we've been spending the night over there to help them pack, because they don't have any family in town. And so I have not been able to digest this Colorado shooting story to the extent that everyone else has. I know it's obviously the biggest news story in the country. It's getting 24/7 coverage on all the major networks. I know enough about it to be proficient in providing a little commentating just in terms of the small amount of research I've done on it. The first thing that comes to me, to my mind, is, as with any senseless tragedy of this nature, the left wastes, you know, they don't even give the victims a chance to get to the morgue before they're calling on stricter gun control laws. And to me, it's one of the most laughable arguments of the left. The fact of the matter is, if the exact opposite had been true, if that theater had not been a so-called gun-free zone, perhaps the shooter, and I understand he was in full ballistic gear from head to toe, he even had a throat guard. I mean, he was in full combat gear. But perhaps if law-abiding citizens had been armed, there wouldn't be 12 dead today, and even, you know, a couple of other dozen injured. That's my first take on it. But Bill, what more can you draw from it? I'm still waiting for this guy to have some sort of a connection to American Renaissance, like the Jewish fella did, allegedly. You know, obviously that wasn't true, but the media painted it as a picture for a while until it just absolutely unraveled because of the sheer absurdity of it. But you know, I'm waiting for this guy. I'm waiting for him to be a member of the Tea Parties, or waiting for him to have, you know, voted for Pat Buchanan or something that they can tie into him to sully the rest decent thinking people. But any of that come across your desk yet, Bill?
Absolutely. ABC News.
Oh, you got to be kidding.
The morning after the shooting, Brian Ross, who is a veteran reporter for ABC News on the Good Morning America show on ABC News, mentioned that now, first of all, James Holmes is not a terribly obscure or unusual name. I mean, James Holmes is a name that there are probably a dozen or more James Holmeses in any city in the United States. There was nothing known about this young man until much later in the day following the shootings. And Brian Ross, nevertheless, had to grope the situation and had to go in and take a shot in the dark, literally. I guess that's an inappropriate pun in this case, but take a shot in the dark and mentioned that ABC News had gone on a Facebook page belonging to a Jim Holmes, and Jim Holmes, it turns out, was involved with the Tea Parties. So they took this shot in the dark at with a complete lack of vetting of in the story or whether they contacted this person or anything. Took a complete shot in the dark. Of course, it turns out it's a different Jim Holmes. And this is what's not in the news. This poor guy has been subject to, immediately he was considered the suspect because it appeared on ABC News. And he had to post up, "I am not the shooter, I'm not the killer," on his Facebook page and spread the word. And even his girlfriend had to put on her Facebook page, "I'm not dating a killer." So ABC News just took this blind attack at the Tea Party because somebody named Jim Holmes had a Facebook page from Aurora, Colorado. Of course, it was not James Holmes who actually committed the crime. But that is an indication of the malice and the bias and the desperate search for villains on the right by the left. Of course, there has been so far no apology from ABC News, no correction of the story. They framed it in such a way as, well, there is this James Holmes, and he's a member of the Tea Party, in a desperate attempt to smear the Tea Party and normal, decent people, as you say. Oh, they made the attempt. It just happened to be a misfire and a complete ricochet back on ABC News. But as I say, they've done nothing to rectify what happened to this poor guy who all of a sudden is the number one criminal in the country, at least until the real criminal was caught.
Bill, absolutely jaw-dropping. Peter Stanton, who always comes on with us the final segment, or most often comes on with us during the final segment of the third hour each night to chime in with his report. I've got him on the case here, and he's looking up interesting tidbits such as that. He's going to be on to follow up. We're going to revisit this story towards the end of the program tonight. We're not going to be talking about it for the entire show, what's left of the show tonight, the next 2 hours, but we are going to revisit it at the very end. And this is absolutely jaw-dropping. I mean, sloppy. It doesn't even cover it. I mean, this is absolutely, it's beyond the pale that the media, I mean, we all know how untrustworthy and unreliable, I mean, this is the media that everybody takes as God's holy writ. This is the kind of, ABC, Fox, NBC, CNN, this is where everybody gets their daily bread. I mean, you expect them to, yes, be biased, yes, have left-wing opinions, but at least get basic facts right, the likes of which a fifth-grade reporter for the elementary school paper would be able to get. But they can't even do this right because they're so full of hatred for conservatives and Bill, I'm stammering over my words just to hear you relay that they were in fact
on the hunt.
Why does it surprise me though? After all these years, I guess the joke's on me that I could even be surprised. But this is exactly how they did it with the shooter in Arizona of Gabrielle Giffords. They said, oh, well, he went to American Renaissance. He was white, and I think he turned out to be Jewish. I don't think he ever did even go to American Renaissance. So. Of course, if he just visited the website once, there's a connection there with Jared Taylor, which is, of course, again, obscenely laughable. But, so there you have it. There you have it.
Well, going back to the shootings in Jonesboro by the virtually pre-adolescent teenagers who shot up Jonesboro several years back, CBS News had a graphic on the story which showed a handgun over a Confederate flag. This is the graphic that they used to introduce this shooting that was done in Jonesboro, Arkansas, a number of years ago. And, there's a connection between gun violence and the Confederate flag. I mean, it was a completely random association. Had nothing to do with the story. And as it turns out, the boy who was the main perpetrator in the shootings was from Michigan. He wasn't even from the South. So even though they seem to shoot themselves in the foot with illegal handguns, or the handguns they want to take away from everybody, they nevertheless continue this incredible malicious attack on the right when the suspects are often on the left. And well, there's another aspect of this, James. The media has also portrayed the heroes of the incident, the heroes of the tragedy, as all being black. You know, there was a photograph of a tall black man hugging some white woman who's grieving and sobbing her eyes.
I saw that. I did see that.
And then another story about a black man who, I don't even know what he really did. And I think he even sort of dismissed what he did as not being that important. But the point is, you've got to seek out the blacks and the minorities who are the heroes in this story, when in fact the theater was total chaos. And whatever aid was given by anybody else was done spontaneously, very quickly, probably in also people saving themselves, and who could blame them? But the idea that, you know, there's some that all of the heroes there are black. Well, what, there were hundreds of people in that theater, and who knows how many stories are like that? The point is, there was nobody in the theater with a handgun to blow this guy's brains out.
Hold it right there. Perfect stopping point. Let's take a break. We're going to come back and do another segment and follow up on this. Stay tuned, everybody. Bill Rowland, guest host, and now we'll be right back.
Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign Newspaper. It is time for you to read the most daring underground publication. Spreading the word through print, it seeks to enlighten the free people to be knowledgeable with current important events and take action in their own communities to stop the New World Order agenda of one world government. This publication is so rogue and extremely daring that establishment sources and critics rarely give approval of its content. Featured articles by concerned citizens, prominent whistleblowers, and credible authors. The Sovereign Newspaper is a monthly 32-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about current events in the age of Obama. The Sovereign Newspaper, available now at newsstands everywhere.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Are you looking for an affordable way to earn your bachelor's degree? Do you want a college experience that's more personal? Then discover your future at America's Transfer College. Students across the U.S. are choosing Ivy Bridge College as a better, smarter way to earn their degree. Thanks to Ivy Bridge's unique program, starting at a two-year college and transferring to finish your degree has never been easier. The program is simple. Start with Ivy Bridge College and take your first 2 years of college online. Transfer to one of over 140 of Ivy Bridge's partner schools and take your upper division courses. Then graduate with your bachelor's degree from the school of your choice. Personal attention, small class sizes, affordable tuition, and a clear pathway to graduation. Start your academic journey and contact us to learn more about Ivy Bridge College today. Call 877-622-2059 or visit americastransfercollege.com to find out more.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. We got one more segment with Bill Rowland, who, as we mentioned, is riding to the sound of the guns tonight to dispel Keith, at least for part of this hour, which is normally Keith's signature hour. Anyway, talking about the Batman shooting at Colorado Theater, Aurora, Colorado, James Holmes, the name of the alleged shooter. So basically, if you're like me and you don't know what's really been going on in this story, I'll just tell you that a man dressed up as one of the villains in the Batman series with full-to-toe ballistics, you know, military gear, walked in with some sort of a smoke device, walked in through one of the exit doors at the bottom of the theater, right in front of the screen, and just started shooting people. And at first, people thought, since this was the opening night of the film, one of the biggest, certainly the biggest film of the year, I believe it will be, they thought it was a publicity stunt or a marketing scheme that the movie, production company had put together. And then obviously when people started, you know, really getting shot, they knew that this was certainly the real deal. Other stories, aspects of the story continue to come in. But again, the thing that I focus most on is that with Columbine and the Virginia Tech shooting, Fort Hood, etc., it always comes, it seems, these things happen right before a big gun vote. And certainly there is a big gun vote coming up, I believe, next week. There's a U.N. gun treaty that America is going to be trying to get into. But other news about this guy, Bill, apparently he was a neuroscience student at a Colorado university. A lot of questions, you know, how did he get $20,000 worth of military equipment to go in and do this? So we'll see, and I'm sure we can rely on the media to give us a fair and accurate reporting. It's really interesting that obviously we had no, I mean, to say the least, we had no idea that something like this would happen. A couple of weeks ago, we booked a guest for tonight, and he's going to be coming on at the top of the second hour. He is an investigative journalist for the American Free Press, who's tagline is "The media is the enemy," and this man Pat Shannon just wrote a book entitled "Everything They Ever Told Me Was a Lie." And again, he's coming on in the very next segment, right after we discuss this story and the aspects of the media reporting that's gone into it thus far. But anyway, Bill, back to you on it. What more do you have to say about it?
My daughter, as I said, saw the premiere. I went to the premiere of the movie here in Memphis. And actually, she didn't care much for it. She said it was a very jumbled storyline, a very jumbled plot. It went back and forth between unconnected events, and it was difficult to follow. The main thing I want to say about this is that the whole film is dark. The heroes are not really heroes. The bad guys aren't really bad guys. You know, in a sense of having this moral relativism about society and crime and so forth. You know, usually in the old Batman, Bruce Wayne and Batman were good guys all the way. Well, in this film, Bruce Wayne is considered the bad guy in Gotham City, and Catwoman is a noble socialist who's just trying to get fairness for everyone, and so she's stealing from the rich to give to the poor, supposedly. And the whole film is very dark. It's The Dark Knight. And this, I think, is a reflection and a projection for society. There's also a fascination now in this country with zombies. And I was talking to my son, and he told me that almost every computer game, iBox game, or PlayStation game that you can buy comes with a zombie feature where you can, you know, be fighting zombies. Well, what are zombies? They are the products of voodoo and of raising the dead, the undead. It's a voodoo affiliation. And so the whole country is now obsessed with this cult of death. And the thing is that horror that's projected in the movies is now becoming the horror of society, and the merger of horror took place in Aurora. Here's a guy working on his PhD in neuroscience, not just a student, a
That's
PhD
right.
candidate in neuroscience.
Good point.
Top
good point.
School from a kid from a very good and stable family, but he's embraced this horror, and he goes into the movie theater and creates havoc at a movie that really is about horror. It's about the horrors of society and the embrace of horror and death and destruction. And that's where our society is headed, because we have gotten away from the basic values that the media and the liberal political elites have scorned for decades. For decades, they have worn down the concept of family, the concept of normality, the concept of morality, all of these things the liberals have been consistently working against for generations. And so the fruit of their labor is this obsession with horror and the creation of horror, and not only on the screen, but in society as well. So this is the fruit of liberalism also. Don't think for a minute that anybody that was involved with this film is an arch conservative or somebody with conservative views, with the exception of Gary Oldham. And, of course, his character is not as prominent as Batman or some of the others. The rest of them, you can be sure, are card-carrying, left-leaning liberals. And they have all been put on a gag order, have been given a gag order by the studio. Isn't that interesting? Because what are they going to say? Are they going to come out with some attack on guns? Are they going to come out and say that the film really was misunderstood? No. They're being gagged because they don't, the studios do not want their actors coming out and saying something that may disrupt the success of this film. But the fact is, if you look at the films that are coming out, so many of them are about horror, death, you know, zombies, obsessions over these things. And they're not coming, believe me, from conservative Christians. They're coming from the liberal elites in Hollywood and those who hide behind various names who are, you know, virtually the sons of Satan. So you know, people should consider this. And in the case of The Dark Knight, the reason the film is such a mess, the reason it's so confusing and goes back and forth between subjects, is that there's a director's cut, which is 5.5 hours long, that supposedly fills in the gaps. So you're going to get this 3-hour horror, and then you can move to the 5-hour horror, which will probably come out on DVD or maybe in select theaters, and you're still going to be feeding the beast by giving Hollywood your money and putting your dollars where Satan has his greatest power. So, you know, that's the real story behind this, is that there's a kid, obviously very intelligent, obviously not a failure, not a loser, not an outcast, who nevertheless decides that it's more important in his life to be a fictional character from a comic book than to complete his PhD in neuroscience.
Ladies and gentlemen, what I want you to understand about Bill's commentary there is that an hour ago, Bill had no idea he was going to come on the show tonight, and he delivered that sort of analysis straight off the cuff. I mean, that's talent. And I tell you, what you just heard from Bill Rowland is going to far exceed the opinion and commentary provided on this story, and it's a saturated story, anywhere else on the mainstream airwaves. We only have a couple of minutes left in this hour, and of course, Bill will be leaving us after this. And Bill, I want to thank you for coming on so much and providing that excellent take on the story here. We're going to try to quickly work in a caller. I don't know if we're going to have time, but Joe in Pennsylvania, we got about a minute. What do you have for us?
Yes, James. Good evening.
Yeah. Good evening.
Yes, you brought up a very interesting kind of a side topic here regarding these zombies?
Yeah, that was Bill, actually, that was making that point, but yes.
Okay, yes. Real quick, isn't it interesting that this man was a product of the higher education, and that is a recruiting ground of the left?
Right.
And also, could you comment maybe in the second hour on this concept of this mystic, Kabbalistic golem? G-O-L-E-M,
right,
which seems to be closely tied into this zombie deal.
Well, we'll certainly try. Thank you for the call. Bill, do you have a take on that? And I know we only have a few seconds left.
Yeah. Thank you.
The golem is a monster that is from the Jewish cabal, actually. It's a Jewish folktale of a rabbi who, using sorcery, creates a sort of a Frankenstein monster out of clay, and uses and directs the monster to destroy all the enemies of Jews and his personal enemies, I believe. But ultimately, the monster turns on the master and destroys him. So I wonder if that would happen to the Hollywood elite, if in fact the golem that they have created among the American people will turn and destroy them as the golem destroyed the rabbi in the Jewish folktale.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, a big round of applause is indeed in order for Bill Rowland, whose night I interrupted so he could come on and really set the airwaves on fire. Of course, Bill was with us a couple of weeks ago during that historic broadcast from the CFCC conference in Nashville, one of our best ever. Bill,
hey, James.
Yeah, go ahead.
James, let me mention that we still have the interview with Tom Sell, Dr. Tom Sell, which we mentioned at the conference, a true American political prisoner. It's been 2 weeks since the conference. As you know, I was under the weather for a week, and because of various activities, we weren't able to get him on this next week, but I'm going to work to have him on next week. It's absolutely a must-listen show. Do not miss these interviews with Dr. Tom Sell.
Next week, everybody, Bill will be back with Dr. Tom Sell. And you heard it from Bill himself. Don't miss it. We'll be back with the second hour right after this. God bless you, Bill.
He had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the 8th.